Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about impulsive decisions. Sometimes we make those, kind of accidentally, I hope. But sometimes that happens. We have kind of a moment there when, I don't know, we suddenly do something and then we go, uh-oh, I'm not sure that was the best thing I ever did. Let's think about that for a second, right? Yeah. So what type of impulsive decisions should we be aware of as leaders so that we try not to do them? Because if we think it out ahead of time, well, certainly then we won't be doing it because we'll go, oh, that's what I thought about. And no, I don't think it's a very good idea, right? Right. So what type of impulsive decisions should we be aware of? Yes, let's talk about this one first. Thank you all for being here. Yes, we got lots of participation. Thank you. The first one we're going to be talking about is acting in frustration. That happens sometimes, doesn't it? You get kind of frustrated, and you kind of go, well, geez, let's, for heaven's sakes, let's move forward and let's do, well, it was kind of impulsive. So acting in frustration. I'm going to make this one the second one because people are talking about it. And, of course, we try not to do this because the civility rules are very important, right? Acting impulsively in kind of an uncivil manner. You kind of lose it for a moment there, which is what impulsive means, right? It means that we've kind of lost it, and it's not such a good moment. So an uncivil manner. Oh, thank you. Yes, folks are asking what the civility rules are because we have some new folk. And welcome to everyone, yes. The civility rules are the only rules that Recipe for Peace Now has. And basically speaking, they say you will not be rude, basically to anyone, but to one another especially. You will not be rude to each other. Yeah, we'll talk about it in a more detailed way when we get to that portion of this show. But yeah, the whole idea is we're not going to act in an uncivil manner to anyone because we're not that kind of people. And we, as leaders, we don't let anyone else do it either. So an impulsive moment that becomes uncivil. How about impulsive decisions without checking the facts? And whether asking whether this is a fact or an opinion, which is kind of a good question too. And the next one we're going to be talking about is impulsive decisions based on a biased opinion, based on something that wasn't truly, well, it wasn't really a fact, now was it? It was a biased opinion. How about peer pressure? Sometimes that happens. Sometimes that happens to our participants. They act impulsively due to peer pressure. Yeah. Yes, I'm going to call this entire category, which is kind of acting without understanding what you're doing, which is impulsive. I'm going to call this entire category acting without empathy. Because empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. And sometimes we don't have empathy and we act without it. We act without understanding of what's going on. So acting without empathy. Yeah, this is true too. Sometimes we respond, we act according to someone else's impulsive decision or impulsive insistence, right? Yeah, and we don't kind of realize it. They've gotten kind of adamant, right? And we act upon it without thinking through whether or not we're acting on an impulse that isn't even our impulse. It's somebody else's impulse, right? Yeah. Yeah, and then let's talk about experts as our final topic, because they will help us with our impulsive decisions, because we want to call in experts to find out what they think. What's their opinion about this? And are there some sort of unintended consequences? Well, they're called unintended consequences because we didn't intend them, right? Yeah. Are there some sort of unintended consequences that we're about to find out about? So let's talk about frustration first. Yes, thank you. Muhammad says it's really annoyance is the frustration. Sometimes that happens. Yeah, a lot of people are giving examples where you've just kind of, it's good. It's taken a while, and it seems like you're just going in circles and like that. And that's where you as leader need to push the process forward, right? And not just allow things to stagnate. There's frequently somebody in the group who kind of needs to keep asking questions that have already been answered, right? That's why they don't need to ask it in the whole group and tie us up, right? That's why you have an assistant. That's why you accept questions in private, right? Well, not private in the sense that you're not being paid for it, of course, because you're going to bill for it, but not in front of the whole group to tie up the process. There are two types of people that do that. Yes, Muhammad says that they do it deliberately. Yes, sometimes. Sometimes you've got somebody who is either trying to sabotage the group, which is, of course, against the civility rules and every other rule of the book. They are not acting in a manner that is for the benefit of all. Or you've got somebody who, well, maybe there's three kinds. You've like got somebody who really likes to hear themselves talk, right? And they want to be center stage all the time. And they need to keep, right? And that happens. And you need to kind of, well, kind of maybe exhibit some peer pressure too, where we have a time limit to how much people can talk for each time, right? I actually institute an actual timer when I've got someone like that. I use it for everybody, but somebody is the only person that needs it, right? And everybody understands that, except for the person who really likes to hear themselves talk. They never understand that they're being intrusive, right? And so we have a time limit to how long we can talk and hold this whole center stage, right? Yes, I'm not fond of a one that I keep, because then people feel that they somehow got ripped off or somebody got longer time than they did, right? I like an actual kitchen timer that goes ding, tick, 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 ding, so we can all hear it and see it on the table. And if I've got one of those people that just keeps jabbering, I set the timing fairly tight. And then when they want to jabber again, I say, I'm sorry, but everybody's had their turn, including you. We need to go on. I'm real strict about it because we'll never get anywhere if we let the jabberers just impede progress. Because there's a point at which somebody is saying something important or making an important pointing something out, or asking something that hasn't been clarified. I mean, I take questions. You should always be open to questions. But you'll know. We all have seen this. You know when somebody's going over the edge, right? And you can tell because everybody else rolls their eyes. Yeah. So, yeah. So it, you need to be not be impulsive, not be uncivil, which we're going to talk about next, but be firm, right? Because you're in charge. You've got to lead this thing to a successful outcome. And if you never reach a conclusion, well, how on earth are you going to reach a successful outcome? Possible, right? Right. Yes. A lot of people are talking about the fact that you need to be calm. Yeah, you do. You're in charge of the process. You need to be calm. Now, you do need to be able to answer questions and ask them and like that. See, yeah, the third, people asking what the third type of person is. Sometimes you have a third person, a third type of person who is really annoying you, and you've got to take 3 deep breaths and be calm. I don't know how to say this nicer, but a lot of you are putting it this way, and I kind of agree. They're kind of dumb. You ever have that? They are having real trouble grasping what's going on, and I think it's sincere. It's not just because they're trying to delay the process, or they just want to hear themselves speak. They plain and ordinary don't understand anything. You're going to have to take these people aside and talk slow. And that's why you have an assistant to help them step by step, maybe less than step by step, like inch by inch, because they're having real trouble. And no, maybe. People are saying it's because English is not their first language, right? And they're having trouble really understanding what's happening and what they're supposed to do. It has been my experience, personally, that generally speaking, although that might be true, generally speaking, it's not necessarily true. There are people that just, they're having trouble with the concept. I don't know why, but they really are. And it's sincere. Now, if you've got someone for whom English is real, because we conduct everything in English, it's the only language I speak. If you have someone who's truly not an English speaker, they kind of indicated that they were, but you can see that they really are not. They're just not capable of doing English fast enough, I guess is what it really is. And I can understand that because, quite frankly, if I had to do a different language, man, I'd be really bad at it. And we actually get an interpreter, an actual human being, and to interpret into their own tongue, into their own language, and like that. And it works out extremely well. With today's technology, they don't even have to be in the room. They just have to be listening and translating into your ear so that it's not disruptive to anybody else. Right? Right. And so, yeah. And so we have a lot of times, because we do multinationals, we do indeed need some – we have several people often – that have language barriers, and they speak English perfunctorily, but they're complicated issues, and they need to really have someone tell them what's being said so that they can have a legitimate opinion and really know what they're supposed to do about it. Yeah. So that is an accommodation that you should make readily, because it's only fair, and that you should know about. People should tell you and not be shy about it, because hey, you want to be able to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the frustration category, people are talking about the fact that you should consciously try not to take a side. Yeah, you're the third-party impartial, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what are we having who are we having the frustration with? Quite a few people, Lee and others, are talking about the participants not participating well. This happens. And we need to keep them on track, right? And we need to be open to questions, because a lot of times it has been my experience that people are not participating well because they really don't understand what they're supposed to do. They've heard the instructions. They've gotten their assignment. But they don't know what to do about it, and they're kind of ignoring it. No, 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 no. We're going to get them help. We're going to show them what it is that they need to do, Right? Right. Yes. Sometimes, yes. Yes, as Margaret and others are talking about, sometimes the frustration is with not our participants, but we might share the frustration about our employer. Now, in this show, we call everybody who had the brains to bring us in to be the leader, we call them the employer. It is a generic term. It does not necessarily indicate an actual relationship type. They don't actually have to be your employer. It is just a shorthand for the person that brought us in. So employer in this show is used generically, okay? Yeah, so don't tell me that they're not your employer and then you're, or you're not being paid or something. No difference. We're going to use the generic term. So we might have a frustration and annoyance that we might share that the participants might also feel with the employer. Yeah, and you need to not be impulsive about that. I've seen people threaten to quit, for example. Well, that's dicey unless you actually want to quit. Because somebody's likely to say, good, my nephew can handle this, and I'd like him or her, him to be paid, right? Yeah. So you don't want to get indignant at the employer, right? Or worse, uncivil, because you can't take that back. I don't care if you apologize. It's still in the air. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you want to be not impulsive when dealing with your employer either, and really give them a reason for something and tell them why it is that they really should do whatever it is that you want them to do. Right? Right. Yeah. And not just demand things. I'm not of the demanding type. I never think it works very well. There's an old expression, you can catch more flies with sugar than you can with vinegar. I'm that type. You should be too, because it's highly effective. Yes. And just reason it, just take 3 deep breaths and reason it out with the employer. Don't go impulsive on him or her or them. The employer doesn't need to be a person. It could be a board, can be an entity, whatever. Who else can we get frustration with? How about outsiders? Somebody who's creating a difficult situation. Somebody who's your opposition, you think they're idiots. Well, it would be impulsive to actually say that, and you shouldn't, right? Because you need to act in a diplomatic manner. Because it has to do with your reputation, how you respond, not with theirs, right? You can let them be boorish, and if you respond in a non-boorish manner, then it makes them look like idiots. That's good, because they are idiots, right? But no, we are going to not act in an impulsive manner towards them. We're going to act in a reasonable, rational, and effective manner. Remember, the idea of impulsive decisions is that they are not effective, that in the long run they don't work. In the short run there might be an effect, but it's not going to be what you need. You have to think it through, right? Right. Also the media, right? Never become impulsive with the media. Never tell them more than they should know. Because even if they say it's off the record, my experience has been that nothing is off the record because they need to make a good story. It needs to be, funny and interesting and dramatic and like that. And if you don't want, and you shouldn't impulsively be funny, interesting, or dramatic. It should be a calculated presentation on your part, on the part of your group, right? Yeah. And not something that you're going to later regret. Yeah. Yes, people are using examples, especially Americans. Hello. This is, of course, a multinational show, and hello to everybody. I happen to be an American also. And we do indeed have, for some reason, this particular administration of the federal government seems to be somewhat impulsive in what they say. They act like they don't understand that it's going to get reported. Understand it's going to get reported. And reported in a not the way you intended sometimes. Because I really do think that's true. This is why it's very important, and Recipe for Peace Now always advocates this. If you're going to deal with the media, and I'm talking about the media, not just the traditional media, which would be television, and I suppose radio still exists, and newspaper, you know what I mean, not just traditional, but every kind of media nowadays. I mean, everybody's a citizen reporter, and sometimes the blogs and things are even more public influential than the what I would call the traditional media, right? Because people really listen. They really think. They're really interested. Mm-hmm. I must confess that I'm busy, right? I look at the news on my phone under the app that says news on my screen, right? That's how I get my media about what's going on in the world. If I'm interested in something, I'll look deeper. But I do it in 30 seconds or something, and I don't read a newspaper anymore. But look how influential that 30 seconds is on my opinion of what's going on, right? And how a headline, how it's worded, can make a difference, right? Yeah. And the opinion of the reporter will come through. So you want it to be the one that you want it to be. You want it to be, well, we're going to call it the correct one. Because it's in our favor, right? Whatever's in our favor is what we think is right. So it's very important to never act impulsive or frustrated with the media. You must also be calm and rational. And we're going to go to uncivil in a minute. You must always be civil, even if they're kind of goading you. Because there are lots of factions sometimes, and lots of media sources that have an agenda. Because it used to be we thought of the media as third-party impartials. They're just reporting it. Now, it was never actually true, because, you know, I've been in business a long time. It was never actually true, because everything has a bias, and the way things are worded is different. And, you know, pictures don't necessarily... You can use a picture that tells a side to a story instead of just be impartial about it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. And so it was never actually true. But nowadays, there are lots of specialty media outlets that really promote a certain side, really promote a certain idea, really promote a certain... Even if they are not what you had in mind and you don't agree with them, you can disagree. I mean, you don't have to agree. We're going to talk about empathy later. You have to understand, but you have to agree. But you do need to be civil and never act impulsively. You act impulsively and say something colorful. I had somebody do this the other day. An actual CEO of an actual multinational organization who should have known better. But he did something impulsive. And it went viral. I mean, it'll go everywhere and out of context, if I may add that. Yeah, viral and out of context. Well, this is bad, right? Yeah. No. We're going to be calm when dealing with the media. And remember that we are always rational. When I deal with the media, and if we've got some sort of issues, which is usually the reason, that we're dealing with some sort of issues that have attracted some national attention or some at least specialized attention because someone's impacted. And there's some interest in it. And the media gets involved because they'd like to know, too. And the idea is to really on your side, or at least not report negatively, or at least ignore you if might be the best idea. But I like to give the media a statement that is written out. Sometimes you don't actually see them, so I could send it written, but even if it is read, right, that they can quote and just do an entirety because it's easier. A lot of media people are kind of busy, and they might even not be their day job, right? And if you can present them with something that makes their job easier to report about you and clarifies what's going on in the manner that you want it to be clarified, now wouldn't that be a good thing, right? Yeah. You have to remember that everybody's human and they're doing the best they can and they have a deadline, and if you could help them meet their deadline, wouldn't that be a good thing?
Seems like a good thing to me.
Pardon me, took a sip of water. Yeah, so you have to think about that, but never, because the media creates public opinion. Public opinion influences lots of stuff. Now, I happen to be fortunate to live in a democracy, so it really influences lots of stuff. But no matter where you are, public opinion does have impact. And the media has impact, and the government watches it. Maybe not even in a hostile manner, like unfortunately in some of your countries, but even in a, I want to know what the voters think so that I can suck up to them and get reelected type manner, right? Yeah, I mean, hey, never disregard someone's self-interest. And that's the point of this. Never disregard someone's self-interest. If they want to have some sort of a position of influence, well, let them be a position of influence in your favor, right? Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Now, is there? No. Let's go to being uncivil. Because impulsive tends to be uncivil. It tends to be said in an uncivil tone of voice, as in you yelled it, oops. Or you said it in that way. Remember, body language and tone of voice is very important. And remember that we as leaders are models of the civility rules. And that's the other thing that you must remember about the media. You need to have a media spokesperson. Everybody should not be talking to the media, dealing with them, or contributing. We need to appoint somebody to tell our side. This person must be a model of civility, the kind of person who never, ever loses their cool and says something impulsive in that tone of voice. No. Especially on camera, especially ever, but especially on camera, that's what the person who I mentioned a little while ago did. Yeah. Yeah, CEO of a big, should have known better. Yeah. Did it on camera, lost his cool, said something really egregious. And his personal bigotry. I mean, I don't like the term bigotry because it has all kinds of connotations, but geez, really? Yeah. Yes, people are calling it politically incorrect and guessing who it was. Those of you who have guessed are probably right, but I'm not going to say on the airways because that would be uncivil of me, right? Yeah. I'm not going to use some personal human being as an example because that would not be polite. That would not be nice to do, right? Yeah. And besides, I've got to deal with him as an employer. Remember using generic. Well, actually, kind of, well, his company employs me. Okay. Now, we're going to be civil at all times. We are models of civility, right? We will never be rude. We will never be impulsive. We will never roll our eyes, sigh. Call somebody something uncivil, right? Ooh, yes, that's very hard to take back. However, cannot, by the way, you cannot enforce what you cannot do, right? Right. If you can't do it, you should not lead this group. You should recuse yourself, right? If you become impulsively uncivil, you violate the civility rules, you've got to do one of two things. If you've really violated them, something fierce, and you can't take it back, you're going to have to recuse yourself. You're going to have to let somebody else. Sometimes people do that when they don't want to be leader anymore. Yeah? Or they accidentally don't want to be leader anymore. Especially if they do it to the employer. That's not good. Right? Never raise your voice. If you're about to raise your voice, take 3 deep breaths and calm down. Right? Right. Unless you are raising your voice in glorious enthusiasm to praise someone. Right? Yes. This is not, that's not the kind of impulsive decision we are thinking about. Yes. Okay, I'm going to say something kind of that those of you who have seen me in person know wouldn't think that I would think. I actually, when you see me in person, I actually wear a cross around my neck. I'm a Christian and I wear a cross. I do not proselytize. But I think that you should not even impulsively exclaim praise like praise God. Or praise Jesus or something like that, unless it is a religious setting, because that is might be not something that others in the room agree with, and that would be my personal belief, which has no bearing on this, right? Yes. Yes, and don't use the word... Yeah, you know, in the United States, we have regions, right? And different regions have different dialects, and it's a big country, and different places have different expressions, right? And in the South, they use bless his soul before they say something rude. It's kind of an insult. So don't do that either, because we all know it. Yes. So you've accidentally... impulsively said something that could be interpreted as uncivil. It just came tumbling out of your mouth before you could stop it, right? And it's not so bad that you have to quit to apologize and use yourself as a bad example of don't do that. Yeah. Because you can't just ignore it. Because you've breached the civility rules. You must realize it immediately, which of course you will, right? Oops. And you must apologize. Giving some lame excuse about having a bad day, a migraine headache, food poisoning. I don't know what you're going to say, but... you must apologize and explain that it will not happen again and you're terrible. And, you know, this is what you're not supposed to do. Yeah, that's the key to it. This is what we're not supposed to do. So, you need to use yourself as an example of, oops, we won't do that. When you have this, the civility rules are in force always. Every time anybody gets together and does any kind of leadership, right? Right. You need to announce the civility rules. We will not be rude to one another. And then kind of give extra details depending on the group, right? They're not so much rules as the idea is not to be rude and to have a convivial atmosphere. You might get more specific depending on the group and what you know about them. But don't make it only those things that you say, because some boor will try to find a loophole, and we're not going to have that, right? Right. You must announce them. I announce that the civility rules are in effect
and that we will not be rude to one another, and that we're going to have a convivial participation, and we're all going to work together as a team, even if I don't think I need to. Even if the group is really single-minded and they're all on the same page and they just need help getting it going, if you know what I mean, right? Yeah. You must, because you never know. I announce them immediately, and they must be enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. Don't wait until things have become uncivil and then say, you know, those civility rules, they're in effect now because we have an uncivil and unconvivial atmosphere and everybody's kind of glaring at each other and interrupting each other. No, too late. We're going to nip in the bud, and we're going to get it before we become uncivil in any manner. Yes. Pardon me. Yes. You must do it consistently, even if you have to do it 973 times. At least it feels that way. And not get frustrated and make an impulsive statement, right? Right, because that's what happens when it goes uncivil. And you cannot enforce something that you do not do. And then when you apologize, everybody laughs because they all know that that's what happened. Yes. No, we will not be doing that. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the next one. Oops, we're going to run out of time. How about an impulsive decision that you make kind of fast without checking the facts? Yes. Ooh, good point. Hussein says that sometimes facts, which he has in quotation marks, are really opinions. Yes. Sometimes something we think is a fact are really opinions, are really ingrained notions, are really our comfort zone and our idea of how the world is or should be, right? Yeah, people think a lot of stuff is fact that's really not. And you need to check that out, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, very good point that Lee and others are making. Not only do our participants think things are facts, not only, yeah, it's kind of the world is flat type thing, but we have lots of preconceived notions about what is foundationally a fact, what is foundationally true, right? About other people, about how the world works, about, oh, whatever it is that we're doing. We've got some things that we foundationally think. Let's see if they're fact or opinion. And whose opinion are they? Yes. And Lee and others are saying, and how about our own? Yes, you must check your own preconceived notions. Because you're going to bias it as leader if you have biases. Right? Well, that's no good. No. We're going to really, really work on our own ideas, our own preconceived notions, our own thoughts of what should, how the world should be, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, this is true too. Quite a few people, George and others, are talking about culture and how culture makes things that aren't facts seem like facts because it's ingrained in us sometimes since childhood, if it's an ethnic culture, but sometimes since we've been in business, too. I do a lot of businesses, a lot of multinationals, right? And there are corporate cultures, too, which accept and think of things as fact, the way the world should be, that aren't necessarily, right? Yeah, that are not really fact. It's just our preconception of it. Let's think about that for a moment. What everybody knows, right? Mm-hmm. sometimes that leads us to the next topic. Oh, such a good segue into it, which is peer pressure. Everybody knows, fill in the blank, as a foundational thought. I wonder if that's not true. What if that's, maybe everybody knows it, but they're wrong. Maybe everybody knows it since 1953, but times have changed. Circumstances have changed. The world has changed, right? Yeah. Sometimes what everybody knows was true, was a fact at the time it was produced, was the time it was thought of. But it's not anymore. Gee, now what? Yeah. Well, we're going to have to reconsider that now, aren't we? Mm-hmm. But sometimes you've got peer pressure because people really like their comfort zone, right? They don't want you to say, I don't think that's true. Who says that, right? Ooh, we're heading to empathy, which is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Somebody might have to say, I think that's wrong. Oh, my goodness, I think that's wrong. Now, that's a tough thing to have to say now, isn't it? I don't agree with that. I know it's always been done that way. See, fact, that's a fact. Always been done that way. Probably is a fact. But is that way still valid? That's something we need to research, something we need to think about, something that people really don't want to think on. And there's peer pressure to conform, peer pressure to the same way it's always been done and not, you know, the expression rock the boat. It's kind of an Americanism, but you all understand it. The idea is, well, don't get up and down, don't jump up and down where we're at high C because it rocks the boat. Just sit down and shut up, right? Yeah. And there's employer pressure to conform because they don't want to have to think about something too complicated. They've already got a preconceived outcome in mind, right? Yeah. And they don't want to have that much imagination. They want it to go within the confines of what they can present to someone else, maybe, right? Yeah. How about the peer pressure? Yes, thank you. Quite a few of you are talking about the invisible participants that we talk about at Recipe for Peace Now. They have their comfort zones too, don't they? The invisible participants are those people who are not actually named or in the room being where, however it is, we're meeting. Sometimes we do Skype and things like that, but they are not really present. But they are influencing our participants. Some our participants are, for example, reporting to them. Maybe not immediately, not in writing, like a real report, but the invisible participants' opinion really matter and really are pressuring our participants to go a certain way because they want to see the outcome go a certain way because their comfort zone is a certain way, right? Yeah. And this is very important to know. It's very important to know how our invisible participants are impacting our actual participants. Right? Right. And I like to know about them. I like, even if they want to remain anonymous, that's fine. I won't tell. And that has to go to your reputation. You won't tell either. If you promise somebody will remain anonymous, you take that to your grave. You do not tell just because you know, right? Your reputation will be shot. It's very important to know who's influencing the outcome and how. I like to invite the invisible participants to participate, even if they want to do it anonymously. People are asking why they want to be anonymous. They're not because they're criminals, but because we're trying, for example, to do something that's kind of outside the comfort zone, outside the box, something kind of revolutionary-ish, sometimes more revolutionary than other times. And the invisible participants have a vested interest keeping status quo. For example, they have a position of power, right? But they really think that the change would be good. They're in favor, but they don't want anybody to know that they're in favor, but they could be really helpful, right? Right. Yes, it's important to keep them anonymous and to listen so that you know what's going on. Uh-huh. Who else has peer pressure? Everybody. So we want to establish the process to prevent an impulsive decision made under peer pressure. Let's think it through. Let's be rational. Let's track progress. Let's promote a rational negotiation, a rational discussion, a rational way of considering this, so that we can get somewhere, right? Right. Now, our next topic is empathy, which goes straight through, right? Because what we're going to need in order to be able to be rational, in order to really think this through, we're going to need understanding. And empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Right? Right. I can understand what it is that you are saying. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Mm-hmm. And empathy will prevent a negative impulsive action. Because you'll understand, I don't know, that it's not deliberate, that somebody is not being rude, that why someone is doing what they're doing. Now, this is where you invoke the process, right? And you explain that we're going to get along for this specific issues at this specific time and this specific place, and then we'll go our separate ways, right? But we will gain empathy, we will work together, we will make a team so that we can have the successful outcome that we all want. Oftentimes I have to explain something that seems to be an extreme surprise. Mm-hmm. I have to explain that the sooner we get our successful outcome, the sooner we finish, the sooner we don't have to deal with each other anymore. This seems to be a big surprise. I do not know why it is a big surprise, but it seems to be a big surprise. It seems obvious to me. We get this done, we're out. And then the next time these types of issues come up, we can remember that even though we really, our opinion about one of the participants' group, for example, that person could be dealt with and we could deal with them again. You'd be surprised. People go, well, yeah, they're an exception to the rule. Hey, that's good enough. Let's work together. Let's get this done. Let's make a practical, workable solution. Now, how are we going to gain this empathy, right? Well, we are not going to act in a frustrated or impulsive manner. We're going to get down to how come. We're going to ask the 5W questions so that we get some understanding all the way around, right? Everybody understands what's going on and how to work together to make this successful. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Do we ask these all in a row? Not necessarily. We need to get to the bottom of understanding. Do we ask them in that order? Not necessarily either. to ask them in front of everybody. That's a judgment call. You might want to ask them in private, right? Yeah. But somewhere along the line, we need to find this out. Because otherwise, we're going to really not have understanding, right? Yeah. We need to find out what on earth it is that's going on. And why? Who, what, where, when, and why? Mm-hmm. And remember that you must have empathy for the other participants. Understanding, right? Understanding for the employer. Understanding what they want. And they need to understand that what they want needs to be flexible. Because it might not be exactly what can be done. Sometimes that happens. Mm-hmm. And also understanding of yourself, right? What are your biases? What are your preconceived notions? What are you bringing to the table that is having an impact, right? Yeah. And instead of acting impulsively, think about yourself in a third-party impartial manner. That's what I do. I think about myself and how I would think if I was a participant and not the leader. What would it be that I would need? What would it be that I would do? Right? Yeah. Our next topic, I think we're going to miss the recipes again. I apologize. But we're having such a good conversation. Our next topic is acting on the impulsiveness of others. We have talked about the invisible participants. And about kind of being goaded into an impulsive act and then needing to apologize. Let's talk a second. Impulsive reaction because we're feeling kind of sensitive. And you know how the expression, somebody pushed our buttons? Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it's an accident, which is why we need empathy. And there's a perceived slight. Yes, people have seen that. And sometimes you don't see it. As leader, you're like, really? Jeez, get a life. But there it is. And there needs to be some acknowledgement that it wasn't really meant that way, right? People are saying to get the person who did it to apologize. I am not big on the public go up and shake each other's hands scenario where you do it in front of everybody. I've seen it done in a rather kind of surly manner, and I'm just not big on it. I don't think it enhances the relationships, but I am big on reconciliation. And an apology that you didn't mean it, right? Or you didn't understand that it was a slight. Sometimes that happens. I deal with multinationals. Sometimes there's some cultural hand motion, for example, that is enthusiastic in one culture but rude in another, or something like that. And you have to understand that really wasn't really meant to be a slight. It's just, it doesn't mean that where I am. But that needs to be explained, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Our last topic is going to be thinking about experts, right? We have indeed done entire shows on this. So recipeforpeacenow.com has the shows archived. Experts help when we don't have sufficient facts and we're going to make an impulsive decision based on what we know, but we don't know what we don't know. Does that make any sense, right? Yeah. We don't know what it is that we don't know, but it's going to make a difference. You need to seek out expert opinion before you take action. I like to do it even if I'm pretty darn sure it's the correct action. I like some validation. I like somebody to really look at it. Sometimes sometimes you've looked at the issues too long. Does that make sense? Yeah, you've kind of overthought it. You've kind of been doing it a while. Everybody's kind of, well, we finally got this. We finally in agreement. We finally got something workable. I like to have as our final act, and I tell people that that's why we're doing it, I like to bring in some outsiders, hopefully people with a real world experience is my favorite kind, even competing experts. We may not change our minds because we've already decided and like that, and our course of action might be perfectly reasonable. But I like to have everything on the table so that we understand what the unintended consequences will be. Because I really don't like the word unintended. I like to have just consequences. What will the consequences of our actions be? Yeah, and I think that's very important. I like to know what's the bottom line here? What's the consequences if we do this, right? Yeah, what will happen if this happens? What will happen if we do this, right? And I think that's very important. I really do. I think it's very important to really think about that, to really consider what's going to happen if we do fill in the blank. And so I like to know. I like to have more than one expert a lot of times who really gives an opinion about what the consequences are going to be, so that we can see if we left anything out, left anybody out. And sometimes we choose an expert opinion that agrees with what we thought, but we should do it because we have all the facts, because we have all the opinions, because we know what we're doing, and not just because we got tired. You ever have something that feels like that? We reach a negotiated outcome. The process is good. We've been doing it a while, and we finally got there. Gosh. You see, I don't want to do something because we got tired. I want to do something because it's good, because it's right. It's because it's what needs to be done. Yeah. Yeah, and that's how my reputation is built. This is true, too, that I don't just settle. I want really, really something that's really going to do some good, that's really going to be workable. My friends, we are out of time. We will try to get to the recipes next time. I'm sorry, but we've had such a good conversation that we didn't really get to them. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, there have been quite a few. Prior shows are archived on our website. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.